Hi, I'm Stargate Pioneer.
And I'm Steven Jondrew, and we're from Better Podcasting, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network.
Just like the show you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of the individual host.
Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Hello, this is Peter Davison. You're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything in the Doctor Who spectrum. We invite you to join us each week for discussions ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi and beyond. Your GPR staff are Jay Witten.
You see how clever I was there? You make that connection? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Keir Hansen.
Proactive. Reactive. Proactive. I'm making up words as I go here.
And Haley Malley.
Hey, that wasn't exactly what I was going to say at all, Jay. Thanks.
Oh, and
spoilers.
We do occasionally discuss recent news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired in their home territories. But don't worry. If we dip too far into the future, we'll give you fair warning.
Welcome to episode 228 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we've crept into the Moffat household in the quietest of pre-dawn hours to whisper our deepest desires into the ear of the Grand Moff in hopes that something, anything, soaks in and gives us a taste of what we really want from this season, and that may differ wildly from what we honestly deserve. I am your host, Haley Malley, and in the GPR studios this week, I have Keir Hansen. How are you today, Keir?
I got my fingers crossed.
And Jay Witten. How are you, Jay?
Do I really have to sit on his lap? That got kind of creepy after I turned 5.
Well, I guess it depends on how good his cookies are. This week, we are bracing ourselves for the final countdown, as Series 10 is less than a week away now. So in preparation, aside from all the drinks and snacks that we're going to have stashed behind the couch, where we know we're going to be spending a fair bit of our time, we have prepared a couple of wishes that we really hope to see from this final season from Misters Moffat and Capaldi. I think, as we noted last week, these are not like pie in the sky kind of wishes. This is not, you know, oh, wouldn't it be great if, and you come up with something that's completely off the wall. These are realistic, achievable kind of things that we think would really benefit the series for where it stands right now, you know, or what we've been enjoying through the Moffat era, I guess. So to kind of go around and around on this, because I got a feeling we're going to have a few. We came up with our own collective little wish lists, and I'm sure there's going to be some overlap. Haley, what's the first thing when you think about what you really want to get out of Series 10 at some point that jumps to mind?
Not early in the season. This will probably have to come more towards the back half of the season. But I want to see, you know, Bill's on her own side adventure, where she gets to kind of take charge of a situation. You know, she gets a little experience working with the Doctor, and then she goes off on her own. We saw Clara do it a couple times, and I want to see Bill get that.
Okay, so she's kind of isolated, like you've got tangent stories where the Doctor's off doing his thing and Bill has to deal with another situation on her own. Or do you want an entire episode where he's sort of sidelined, or...
Maybe not completely sidelined, but he doesn't have the big job of the episode. For whatever reason, that ends up falling on Bill's shoulders.
Okay, she does the heavy lifting. I think that'd be really cool. Yeah, Jay, what do you got on your wish list for this season?
I want to see a swift exit of Nardal.
Okay,
I like the idea of having him there as kind of the bridge character, somebody that can give the exposition to Bill instead of the Doctor explaining everything. You know, have the discussion happen in a more natural way instead of just, you know, the way that it always tends to happen. But I don't see a need for him on the TARDIS for a long period of time. Right. Let him be there as kind of the more experienced, guide Bill in, let her get a feel of the place, and then he can work his way out.
Mm. I know with what we've been given so far, news from Lucas, obviously describing the development of his character, from Moffat and even PCAP, you know, talking about his involvement with the production. I know that we're going to get a pretty definitive answer as to why he's really there, you mm-hmm. know, and is sort of indebted or involved with the Doctor at this point. And their relationship, which we got kind of a glimpse of in the Return of Dr. Mysterio, as far as, you know, he's far more knowledgeable than people give him credit for. He's, you know, he's kind of got this down. He can pilot the TARDIS. He knows yeah. the navigation system probably better than the Doctor does, and so forth. So there's some credibility to his character, but they also... I thought I had read at some point that they were talking about that he does have an exit point.
Actually, in one of the articles that was in our news last week, the one about the interview with Stephen Moffat, he said that initially he was only supposed to be in for a few episodes, but he's in all of them now, one way or another.
Right, or at least the lasting impact. You know, it may be him being clever with the way he's describing it and saying that the implications. I think that there's going to be some sort of a story to why he's there. That not only justifies his character, but also explains why his presence will have that lasting impact for the remainder of the season, whatever our through line is, you know, our running theme throughout or what have you. I had kind of a crossover on this because we know that Jamie Matheson's episode Oxygen is supposed to be this super dark satire that focuses really hard on the heavy lifting is really being done by Bill and Nardal in that that episode, from Matheson's description and from Moffat's glowing about it afterwards. It's supposed to be like one of the creepiest as far as what he's coming up with for an adversary. Matheson himself said it was scarier than anything he had done, which is saying a lot because he's done some pretty exceptional concept work for his characters. But I'm hoping that was going to be the beginning of Nardal's exit. You know, it's kind of like you're watching a series, you learn the characters, and all of a sudden they give them the very special episode, and you know that means, oh well, they're gone for, because now we get to know them and care about them, so they're as good as gone. It may not happen right away, because I know that he actually appears in episode 6, The Extremist, the beginning of that 3-episode block, but but I think that's like that may be the beginning of the end as that goes on. I had a kind of a crossover on that one. I had actually said that because we know we're going to be returning to the Ice Warriors with some expansions, but I'm hoping that they personally get a little bit of a more of a vindication of their status as, you know, we are not truly intended to be villains. This situation has been kind of thrust upon us because we're just trying to survive. And even if you really want to extrapolate and pull the story out to its fullest, they could potentially find the Doctor responsible for a lot of their difficulties because of the whole issue with the Fifth Doctor possibly setting the wheels in motion for the deterioration of the Martian atmosphere, and that it went from a vibrant planet to this desert and uninhabitable. Yes, I'm tired. It's been a long weekend. So that this might be something where they try to enact a little bit of revenge. I wanted them to get a little bit more of a... I like the fact that they are a very muddy villain. They're never really seen as outright evil because there's always a really understandable, well, in most cases, understandable justification for the things that they do. So, Haley, around to you again. Right. What you got?
I would like to see a really good new villain that could become our recurring villain going forward. Because the only recurring villain I can think of that was created in New Who is the Angels. And I would like to see, you know, Moffat has one last chance to come up with a good villain before he goes out.
Mm, yeah. Well, we've got the monks, who we don't really know much about yet, other than the fact that we're only calling them the monks because we don't know what they yet call themselves. Mm-hmm. See how they fare. There is this Scottish menace that's supposed to come up in the Rona Monroe episode that they're saying absolutely nothing about, other than the fact that it's, you know, it, you talk about, you know, the good things come to those who wait, and Rona's come back out with this story that everybody's like blown away with, and that's the Eaters of the Light episode. So that could have some premise to it, I suppose. I don't know. Or as we were saying, you know, what Jamie's come up with, although his villains tend to be kind of one and duns. I guess, flatline, things like that. So, yeah, I could see that, though. Yeah, I know you can rest on your laurels with the Weeping Angels for a while, but it'd be interesting for him to throw one more into the mix there and say, okay, Chris, now you run with this for a while. See what you can do.
Yep.
Jay, what else you got?
This one's not so much of a wish list kind of thing. I'm just really excited to see how the thing with the Mondasian Cybermen play out, because we know that we're going to have the different iterations of the Cybermen in this episode.
Right.
And so I'm just excited to see how this plays out, because you've got the classics going up against each other. I mean, no matter what they come up with, I think I'm going to be happy. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I would really like to see something where, it almost becomes a fight between the two factions, or between multiple factions, however many there are. I don't know.
Right.
But, something going on to where it's like, the different versions of the Cybermen are all about to have at it, because, clearly we're the better version, mm-hmm. Whatever. And it's up to the Doctor to, kind of put it all on halt, like stop these villains from destroying each other so that they can focus on him again, kind of thing. Because them going to war between themselves is going to be far more devastating. So he has to pull all attention to himself again.
Sure. So. Well, we've seen Dalek Civil War.
Yeah.
So, it's not unfamiliar territory. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious to know exactly how adeptly they pull off the rationale for how this can happen. Is this a breach within the fabric between multiple universes? Is this somehow involved with time travel, so that because the Doctor's timeline is actually the only through line that connects all of these possibilities, mm-hmm. of Cybermen origins, or advances, I should say, that they somehow, he is at the cause of this overlap. I don't know. I always like to know that the story they've come up with, the concept to do something fantastic like this, really stands up. And you're like, wow, okay, that's a clever concept. Yeah. I like the way that you tie that together.
Or again, something that we've pointed out before is, the more explanation that you give, the more solidly it has to be thought through. Mm. Whereas if you just walk into a room and all of a sudden there's five different versions of Cybermen and you have to deal with the clear and present, issue at that point, you don't necessarily need an explanation. Just kind of like, okay, they're here. Quick, let's do something.
Right. So. I don't know. I just opened this jar. And all I know we're going to discuss this a little bit more in the news, but we have Missy. We know that she's going to be in episode 6. And if you want to put your spoiler earmuffs on for about 60 seconds or so, I just want to say, because this has been just bombarding the news for the past few days. So, yeah. All right. Earmuffs on. Good. I'm hoping that because of the fact that Missy comes in at the beginning of a 3-part story, which is something we haven't done in a long, long, long time, an explicit 3-parter, that somehow we're going to get the factors leading up to Missy's regeneration. I should say regeneration into Missy. Mm-hmm. Some sort of whether it's in flashback form or something, that gives a bit of an understanding as to why that specific... was there some control over this regeneration? Did she have some say in it? Or was it something where, like a lot of times we theorize with the Doctor about, his regeneration historically has always been something that is the best thing to serve him at the time, whether he had any control over it or not.
Mm.
Or at least it's been written that way. You don't get what you want, you get what you need.
Right. See, the interesting thing is, and I'm trying to find where I read it again. Somewhere it said that the two masters would actually come face to face. So,
Yeah, I heard a really wild theory on this one. It gets a little bit wibbly wobbly, but it kind of you can kind of take it where Missy goes and actually mortally wounds her predecessor in order to force the regeneration into her.
Nice.
She's that nuts.
Yeah, I heard that theory.
I can see that. And that would be awesome.
Wouldn't it? Well, so, all right.
the other thing that I think could happen with that, and they've kind of done it in, I think it's Big Finish, but it may be maybe some, I can't remember. But basically, like at a point where the Doctor is regenerating into someone else, there's this thing that happens inside his head where he meets his new self, and they kind of discuss what's going on. And it's obviously it all happens like inside his head, so we never see it on screen. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking that could be the way that they get away with it. But that, I don't know.
Yeah. That's a polite way or a careful way of doing that, you know, mm-hmm. the official handoff.
Yeah, I mean that way it doesn't mess with canon. There's nobody crying foul because of, you know, nitpicking this, that, or the other. But it would kind of be the safe route,
right?
It's like, well, yeah. Technically they were faced. Whatever.
Big Finish did have multiple masters against each other. That was something that they definitely established.
And see, that's one of the things that I would like to see out of this is I want to see the two of them going head to head, and then, you know, the master kind of pulling the thing that he always winds up doing and trying to, you know, get the Doctor in on his side. But then you have both of them vying for the Doctor's favor. So they're like, whichever one.
Right. Well, they were really kind of hit. A lot of people were landing on that particular clip from Sound of the Drums, I think, where it was the I think it was it the Master accusing the Doctor of not being there to save him at the right time. So there's a line that's kind of just, it's this kind of unusual thing. It's kind of thrown in there, but because of the drama of everything that's happening at the moment, as the Master's dying in Tennant's arms and that kind of thing, and you just kind of think, all right, you kind of let it go. And now they're picking up on that, saying, "Whoa, well, that was Moffat actually writing, and he's the guy plays the long game in his storylines."
So. He knew he was going to be showrunner and that he was going to need to. Yeah, no.
Got all figured out. I had. Oh, wait, Haley, I think it's your go on this one.
Next one's deep. Poop emoji.
Will it or will it not be voiced by Patrick Stewart?
Who can say? And if there are a bunch of poop jokes to follow it up, I mean, all the better.
It's chocolate frosting.
Yeah, I was going to say, as long as we have somebody in a Deadpool costume walk back on, like, you know, the back end of the screen.
Skull poople. Jay, what do you got on your list?
I want to see a solid conclusion to Capaldi's reign. I'm hoping that, I mean, because we've had the Dark Doctor, we've had some, you know, some lighter episodes. I really hope that he gets to have some fun through, you know, at least like the first half of the series. Mm. And then it kind of comes to a satisfying close at the end. I want him to have his, you know, I mean, not even vengeance. Like, I don't think that he's necessarily been wronged by anyone that hasn't been dealt with, but, you know, kind of, he came in as a very abrasive, very spiky Doctor. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to lose that as we say goodbye to him. Like, I want him to have that kind of that moment on the way out.
He did say at some point there, I forget where chronologically the interview was falling over the course of the last month and a half or so, but he did say at one point, he said in his estimation, he felt that at the close of Series 9, the Doctor is left contemplating whether it was a wise decision to put his guard down.
Okay.
What that means, you know, whether he's sort of, you know, tipping his hand a little bit to say what's going on in Series 10, I don't know, because it almost seemed like, you know, from the clips of what we've had from, you know, the pilot, which we'll get next week and so forth, which interestingly, all the stuff they've been saying about why they decided to actually title it the pilot is great too. They're saying it's going to be one of these kind of like introductory episodes that allows people the same sort of walk into it cold as if it were the 11th hour or something like that again, or Rose. Mm-hmm. So interesting in that choice. But does that mean then that he's looking back on what they've just filmed and said, yeah, there's, you know, 12 is getting back to being proper 12 for a little while, but I don't know. I didn't really see if I saw any signs of that in the way that they were editing all of these teasers and trailers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would definitely be coming out of left field based on what we've got so far.
Yeah, and just the way we've seen Bill so quickly taken into the fold and that kind of thing too. So I had down that I'm kind of hoping that, because we know we're going to be getting a Dalek story that's going to be potentially rather complex, which is good. I mean, I think, and that's kind of what I had noted down here, is that I want a Dalek story with some substance.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. because some of the Dalek stories we've gotten in the past, like, you know, Witch's Familiar, Magician's Apprentice thing, where we get a little bit of an insight into why the Daleks speak the way they do, because their, you know, their emotions are retranslated or so forth. And that had, you know, we gave us something to kind of chew on for a little bit. Or the Into the Dalek episode prior to that, where we're sort of getting within the persona and so forth. But I'd like something that really adds a new facet to this villain, which we have worked, you know, seven ways to Sunday.
Yeah.
And give us something that makes you think either I'm seeing them a little bit differently now, or they are genuinely a threat again, where as opposed to just, you know, strength in numbers or tenacity, which is kind of what they've fallen into at times. And now there's really there are some genuine concerns with this species again.
Yeah.
Dalek time controller.
And that's kind of the thing too, is that, you know, we've had one or two episodes where the Daleks are menacing. We're like, oh wow, you know, we haven't seen them this, you know, this formidable in a long time. Mm. But I really can't think of an episode where that we've had recently that makes them scary. I mean, when the Daleks first came out, people were terrified of these things. They were not like anything they'd seen, and there was genuine fear in what was going to happen with these things. And now it's just kind of like, oh, look, the Pepper Potts are back. Let's see how we can kick them around this time. And so I would like to see them become truly formidable villains again. And not just, as you said, based on, well, they've got, you know, 10,000 of them showing up, so obviously they're scary. It's like, no, that's not what makes them scary.
Haley, you got anything else on your list?
Paternoster Gang. I wants it. I don't think it's going to happen, because I think we would have seen something of it at this point, but yeah. I wants it.
Yeah, that's, and I think that's valid to include on the realistic list as opposed to just the pie in the sky wish list, because there's nothing saying. I mean, this was actually something that Neve Campbell and Catherine Stewart brought up when they were at the Regen panel. They said, you know, they really liked the fact that in Deep Breath, they were the transition team. Mm-hmm. They were the one the Doctor relied on to see them through this change, because it was something they were prepared to handle. And they thought, wouldn't it be great? So we may not get it here in Series 10. It may be something, though, that is Chibnall's utilization for his first episode of Series 11. You know, rely on the Paternosters to again, see him through this. See them through this. I'm going to say them, because I'm not going to say him definitively.
Well, or even in the Christmas special, maybe when we do the regeneration, like, we thought it looked like Vastra had experienced a regeneration before. Mm. What if she experiences the next regeneration in her past? So she's seen the Doctor, regenerate
before. She's
seen before.
12 to 13. Gotcha, yeah.
Nice. She gives Moffat one last chance to play with time and wibbly-wobbliness and all that.
Or gives Chibnall an opportunity to come right out of the box, screwing with our chronology. Say, yeah, remember when? No, you don't, because I didn't write the when yet, and I'm writing the when now.
But when will then be now? Soon.
Soon. Jay, what else you got on your list?
Well, since you already took my next one, which was Dalek Time Controller, because, I mean, come on. The unrealistic, but could be a lot of fun and could go back to the whole spiky Doctor, you know, afraid to let his guard down thing. I would love to see the duo of me and not dead Clara become such a problem, such a time aberration, that the Doctor has to step in and do something. And he has to take them out because they are causing so much havoc with the time stream.
Okay, so we're playing kind of the Charlie Pollard route here, about the one who should not have lived.
But the thing is if you remember, he doesn't remember Clara. So yeah, that could bring like all new levels of pain and horror into it.
Mm. Yeah, well, again, sorry. Go ahead. If they were going to bring back the Paternoster Gang, and if they were going to do that in the Regeneration, the Christmas special for the Regeneration, like, they would remember her. And right, if that were to be what caused his regeneration, was having to deal with Clara, I think that would be pretty epic.
And that could be a good way to see him out as well, is he finally, like, you know, he gets all the memories and stuff back. So he deals with Clara and has to remember who she is once he's dealt with her, and cannot deal with the fact that he had to do that to one of his friends, and willingly regenerates. Not that, you know, he's been injured or something like that, but, like, I can't live with this person that I am now. And just regenerates at will.
I get your point on that, but I have a bit of an issue with it, and that has to do, I'm going to call it the Martha Jones effect, because that's a matter of, you have a companion who is right on point and hitting all the things that make for a phenomenal companion of intellect, of capability, but is living in the shadow of the previous season's companion. And that'd be completely unfair to Bill Potts, as far as, you know, if he's continuing to have these weird, you know, murmurations in his head of something that he's not supposed to remember, but it's nagging at him, and it finally reveals itself within the last couple of episodes, and now he's dealing with all this grief to the point where it ends up taking him down, and she's left there saying, what the hell was I all about?
And again, if they wait till the Christmas special to do that, you don't have that problem, and it helps them avoid a leak of like, oh, Clara and me are on set. Because I think that'd be something hard to keep under wraps. So if they save it for the Christmas special, you know, it's maybe November before we find out. And that gives Bill like a whole season that's just about her.
I guess. I'm just thinking about the taste it would leave in my mouth at the end of it all. If that's what they did to kind of button up the series. But,
you know, and who knows? I mean, that's a ways off. But again, I said this is very not realistic. It's just a fun thought process that I went through.
Well, that's fair. I had one of the last things I had on my list was just that the period piece that we know we're going to be getting, which is the Sarah Dollard's third episode, which now we know is actually going to be titled Thin Ice. So that's, I just want, since it seems to be a little more rare these days that we do get an actual period piece. I'm not counting Robots of Sherwood. Sorry. that I'd like it if there's something where, because I always kind of enjoy this sort of thing where the events that take place through the episode, I guess this is around 1814 or so, something that happens ends up setting the world as we know it in motion. The doctor's involvement is responsible for something that we take for granted today. You know, and because of this, to this day, we blah, 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 you know?
Yeah.
I always enjoy those because it's something where when you have a time travel premise like this, you've got to be screwing up the timeline. I mean, the butterfly effect has got to be running rampant with everything that they do. But they so often just kind of, you know, they smooth out the sand on their way out so that no footprints are left behind. But that just can't work. So I always think it's really clever when there's something that seems kind of innocuous and ends up being So that's why a fork is shaped like that, you know?
Human life expectancy used to be 300 years until the doctor showed up.
Right. So, yeah. Hill, you got anything else on your punch list?
I think that was it.
All right. Jay, you got anything left?
The last thing that I have is that I was thinking about it the other day, and I was going through some of my favorite episodes, and it has been, since series three, that there has really been a very scary villain introduced, I can't think of the last time that there was a truly frightening episode that really messed with me. I mean, there have been a couple that were kind of close, like Hyde was particularly creepy, but then at the end it just kind of gets, oh, everything's happy now because it wasn't really a monster or whatever. And it's, you kind of pulled the punch there at the very end, but it's just, I want to see a truly scary episode again. Not scary bad like some of them have been, but there's some of there's some Moffat has come out and said that there is one episode that's supposed to be that, which is the episode 4 Knock Knock by Mike Bartlett, and they won't even tell you what the monster is,
right?
But
they've done that in a couple of cases. They're kind of keeping a lot of that under wraps, which is cool. I'm kudos to them for being able to keep it quiet thus far.
I'm hoping that means that we're going to get something that's going to keep me up at night.
Yeah, because who needs sleep?
I mean, the spot behind my couch needs to be cleaned, and I need a reason to get back there.
I know I was asking around on this, and I know Julie had actually commented that, you know, based on how things kind of wrapped up with Series 9 and having a legitimate return to Gallifrey, she wanted to know whether or not we were going to deal with any sort of an explanation as to how the time lock got resolved. Or, you know, obviously, if we do have any involvement, you know, with life on Gallifrey going into this series, which I don't know. I would have thought that they'd, you know, maybe throw a glimpse of something in one of these trailers with all the stuff flashing past us, but they haven't done anything at this point. I haven't seen any robes, no turbo collars. So maybe they are going to back off, as we've been talking about, and saying, you know what, less is more on this. But yeah, she still wants at least a little bit, potentially, maybe because we know we've got some Dalek involvement, there'll be at least a disgust explanation as to how this has all come back into the forefront.
Hopefully, yeah. I mean, it's I really hope that they don't bring Gallifrey back just to ignore it completely for a solid series, because that would be frustrating. But yeah, I think name-checking could be all that we really need at this point.
Yeah, even if it's just leaving some breadcrumbs that Chibnall could then choose to run forward with if he wants to, or if he looks at that and says, you know what, that whole ball of wax, that was you and RTD. You guys had something something there that, you know, it was a great vehicle, but I've got other things I want to do, maybe on a more character-driven basis or who knows what. So it doesn't close the door on it for him. I think there's some continuity courtesy? Continuity courtesy. Yeah, I guess that's kind of a thing now.
Way to coin a phrase.
Yeah, it is now because I said it and it's on the internet. But yeah, so I'm kind of in agreement on that one. I want a little bit of a Gallifreyan reference, if not a little bit more explanation, but don't overdo it by any means.
Well, and we had theorized a while back that if we figured out what happened with the Master before he became Missy, that that might tie in with Gallifrey.
That's true.
And that if they're bringing back Sims, spoilers, earmuffs.
sorry. But yeah, I mean, maybe that's why we've got three, you know, three episodes to get us through that.
Yeah.
So, and the, you know, you look at the titles too, the, you know, of those particular three episodes, and the nice ominous titles that go along with it for, I don't know. I love the fact that we are so much in the dark about a lot of this. So, yeah. But you know what? There's actually something I wanted to kind of tack on tonight just for ha-has and just kind of maybe to make Jay twitch a little bit. So. Every once in a while, obviously, I got a series that's been running for 53 years or so. You're going to, pretty much every day on the calendar is going to be something where you can look back and say, oh, this was the day that blah, 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 blah happened. Well, as we're recording today, it happens to be the 9th of April. This was the day that, for the first time in the new series, Mark Gatiss penned an episode. Now, in doing so, on Quiet Dead, decided to bring in a historical character for the extent of the episode. It wasn't even just something where, you know, like Tom Baker saying, oh, Shakespeare, I knew him so well, or, oh, Leonardo da Vinci, we used to have drinks together on the Seine. That doesn't even make sense. But first historical person to appear in the new series at all, and the first in Doctor Who proper since the Time Lash story. I know it's going to be a while before we do these kind of lookbacks, but Jay, you know, I never really think I picked your brain on this story in particular. I know, you know, you're okay with certain Gatiss stories and others not so much. Mm-hmm. Where does this one fall in your love-hate relationship with Mark?
The Unquiet Dead was actually one that I really didn't mind on first watch. It was a very interesting premise, you know, I mean, ghosts and Charles Dickens on Christmas Eve. It just, it all kind of seemed to fit. And it's surprisingly, it holds up pretty well for me. Like, I would say that this is one of the Mark Gatiss episodes that I like the most. The going back to it and getting through some of the explanation as to why things happened the way they did, some of the rationale in the plot, I find a little bit of it to be kind of, yes, you can tell that it's Gatiss, and you can tell he's trying his hardest to be clever and, you know, tie some stuff in. It's, but on the whole, this is definitely up there with Cold War for me.
Okay, cool. Haley, do you look upon this one historically with any kind of general impressions, or is it just it was an episode for its time?
I don't have any clear memories of this one.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just, I just look at it as, I don't know how much connection Gatiss was having, or discussion with Russell about the things that were being sort of seeded in this story, because this is where you first get the mention of the rift that occurs over Cardiff that ends up becoming the whole basis behind Torchwood. And Eve Miles and her character as Gwyneth they end up doing this whole wibbly wobbly explanation as to, you know, her DNA within the time stream that ends up giving us, you know, our character within Torchwood proper too. So I don't know whether this was something where they had a game plan together to kind of see this spinoff occur, or whether Gatiss just hit on such great stuff that RTD looked at that and said, you know what? Yes, I like this. I can run with this. And it's more than what I can do within Whovian episodes. I want a spinoff. And his brain just, you know, was off to the races.
I think it's more of the latter. It's like, you know, this idea of a rift was dropped in there and is like, I want to make a note of that. We might come back and use that again later. And then Torchwood happened.
Right. Sooner than that. Plus Eve Miles. Just all the Eve Miles you could possibly
Well, that's just like, oh, yeah, we're definitely using her again. Don't know how, but definitely.
Okay. So, yeah. There's your sort of on this day in Doctor Who. This is one where, you know, of all the anniversaries of things that come about, this is one that kind of stood out. It's like, yeah, this is worth discussing for a few minutes, even if it's just to see Jay twitch.
Which is always good for laughs.
But we do have, as we've been kind of hinting to it, there's a little bit of news. A
little bit.
First item is really just something that I think everybody just needs to kind of mark a calendar for, because it needs to get established every year. So just make sure that you've locked it into your smartphone or what have you. September 2nd of this year is going to be the Doctor Who Comics Day. And there's already been all kinds of great stuff, news and expectations coming from Titan and everybody involved with it. So we'll just kind of link the article there that gives kind of the breakdown of some of the things that you can look forward to. And just plan on breaking down the door of your comic shop. If they are not, I would check in prior, I'm talking months prior, and ask them whether or not they are going to get involved specifically with the distribution to have materials on hand to go along with this. Because if you have any shop that's as nearly as craptacular as the one I have in my town, you essentially have to order everything that you want to see on the rack, because unless you mention it, they don't order it from Diamond, and it sucks. So
that's why it's good not to live way out in the middle of the sticks.
No, because now I have this idea of taking the coffee shop that I planned on using as my retirement option and now combining it to be a coffee and comic shop.
Yeah, because that's a business that's booming, is comic book shops.
Highly caffeinated comic shops.
Mm-hmm. Yep, no, that's a market that's definitely trending up.
Come for the coffee, leave with nothing else.
Ink and beans.
I don't think that's even just a small town thing anymore. I think most comic book shops are buying the big name ones to put on the rack that there's a chance somebody might walk in and buy. And for the most part, they're just getting customer pull lists after that.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah.
Well, regardless. Or irregardless.
Oh, jeez.
All right. Well, we did dance around the topic a little while ago, but we would be remiss if we didn't mention the fact that officially, after the Sun jerks trying to leak information out there, that other tabloids said, yeah, well, as referenced in the Sun, and threw all this junk out there, the BBC finally came out and said, you know what? The hell with all of you. Here's the official word. Stop rumoring about us, and we'll just tell you straight. For those of you who do not want to know what's going on within the world of Doctor Who, not really sure why you're listening to this cast in the first place, but we do.
Also, how have you avoided this?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, that's true. Just, wait a minute, pizza has cheese on it? So we'll see John Zim in his crazy arse, over-the-top ego emo master one more time.
Now, see, we discussed this a little bit, but are we hoping that we get proper John Sim Master as, like, first showed up in Series 3? Or is it going to be Slim Shady Master with the skull and lightning bolts and all that fun stuff?
The word that I had heard from this is that it was confirmed that this is post-End of Time.
Laisai.
Yeah. So that's when he's completely off his nut at this point, and is just, you know, he's shouty and mad and emotional and, well, we believed dead. Yeah. So riddle me that one.
Mostly dead.
Only mostly dead. So while they were going through his pockets looking for loose change, you know, so this, again, it kind of goes back to, I wish that that pot shot theory out there was right, that at the moment where, you know, he's I'm not dead yet, and he goes to spring himself up and everything's going to be okay, Missy shows up from the future and says, no, I need you to do this, and drives a stake through his heart.
Ooh, even better, Clara does it. He regenerates into Missy, and then Missy goes and finds her in the shop.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, or maybe it's not, you know, we don't actually see Clara, but it's kind of like one of those back of the head things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the little tinkling of the doorbell as the shop door swings open, and a familiar profile kind of thing. But yeah. So it's been since 2010 that we have seen the Slim Shady Master out there. Still a divisive persona. When this news came out, as many people that got super excited about it, and they're like, well, this just means that, you know, we're going to stack up masters, things are going to get really kind of crazy. He set the tone for a bonkers master rather than a particularly evil master, and now he's sort of more chaotic, and they were really pleased to see that. And other people were jumping out saying, you know, I couldn't accept that master. Maybe because to a certain degree they had just sort of been steeped in, you know, Delgado and mm-hmm. Ainsley, and, you know, and just that kind of the classic master kind of evildoer. But, or maybe they just, you know, that wasn't what they wanted from John Sim because of what they've seen him do in other roles. But I don't know. I'm okay with the whole Saxon persona and that mm-hmm. manipulation. I didn't, Jay, I can see exactly why you're asking about whether or not it was before or after the hoodie comes on. Because those are two very different masters as far as I'm concerned, too. And I like the predecessor for certain. And it was the latter that I wasn't entirely sure of. I still enjoy it. Right. But I just don't know if it's something I'd want more of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, I mean, if we know that it's coming post End of Time, I really do hope that it is just the explanation of the regeneration. Because we really did just get Missy out of nowhere, which we've never gotten a master without some kind of explanation as to why he's in this form now. Mm. Like, well, it's always been.
That kind of happened with John Sim? Well, no, never mind.
Well, you had the Derek Jacobi transition.
Yeah, and we got the Derek Jacobi kind of like, well, he had to go into hiding. Like, we didn't see the transition, but we got the explanation.
Mm. Yeah.
So, yeah, I really hope that it does kind of tie up the story about that. So we'll see.
I enjoy the fact that now we have gotten so well established within 10 years of New Who that the viewing audience is as interested in knowing how villainous Time Lords regenerate and some of the machinations involved with that as we have always been with the Doctor himself. So just the entire idea of, you know, is there a rhyme or reason to it? Do you have any control over it? Do you get any say in it if you make the right plea to the right power at the right time? Is there really rules to it as far as your limits and so forth? It's now that's all back and sort of in modern understood canon. It's always been canon, but now it's something where it's kind of the modern parlance. So that's why I think this kind of thing is still that much fun.
You know what my main issue is with bringing Sim back for, you know, whatever it is he's coming back for, is that now the people who have been barking up the tree for a degeneration from Capaldi back into Matt Smith are like, well, we're bringing actors back all over the place. Come on, let's do this. And it's just, yeah, I've heard this more than once, and it's really starting to get on my nerves.
That's a whole other discussion for another time. We could do an entire episode as to, you know, questionable fan suggestions and theories. You know? But that's...
Did we just do that whole episode?
Isn't that what we just did right now? Yeah.
Yeah.
Degenerations.
I'll be interested to see how they handle this, because it could go very right, but it could also go very, very wrong. And it's
or
just,
it could be something divisive, like when Matt Smith showed up in PCAP's first episode.
Or when Amy showed up in Smith's final episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let the absence hang.
Yeah, it's the one thing that I hope we get out of this is that Missy's character is going to take a little bit, that we're going to see progression from it. She's either going to go more evil or more nuts. One of the two. Mm-hmm. Maybe both. Who knows? But like, I want to see something come out of this as the payoff.
Without necessarily being... I always like when we get hints of the interconnectedness of their lives, but no more than hints.
Yeah. You
know? I don't want to know, oh, well, when we were at the Citadel together and da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, and I don't want that much detail. I like it when I get these little tidbits that say, you know, you've relied on me more times than I've relied on you. Or, you know, there was a moment when you would have followed me to the gates of hell, kind of thing. You know, those kind of statements that say, oh, God, you know, they are so interwoven.
You're not looking forward to The Adventures of the Young Doctor and Master? New spinoff series coming to BBC Three this fall.
Oh, you know, one more news item that I did not put in here, but I think it's actually worth referencing. And this definitely because of the fact that that U.S. audiences have not been able to see the Class series. We've been reviewing it throughout as it's been airing within Canadian broadcasting. But Moffat came forward and said that, and Ness has backed him up on this, there is no guarantee that the show is canceled. And he said, how could it possibly be? Because we can't let the Weeping Angels win. That was his little moment of throwing that little segment out there. You can't let the Weeping Angels win, so the series has to come back. And he's hoping that based on off the remaining pockets of global viewership and the enjoyment of the series proper as it gets into their hands will be the groundswell necessary to see it into a second season.
And maybe if that happens, the people at BBC will recognize the fact that American audiences need to get it before 6 months after it's come out.
Yeah, we thought they learned this lesson with Doctor Who years ago, but nope.
Well, they learned it with Doctor Who.
Yeah, and then it's like, hey, let's go back to that old model where we make the Americans wait. We know how patient they are.
Now, you know what this was? This was payback. They're like, oh, you think you're going to one-up us by looking stupid over our Brexit thing? Yeah, no, you get to wait.
No one out-stupids us, stupid colonists.
Because let's face it, I mean, you know, England said, nobody can ruin their country as fast as us, and America said, hold my beer.
I got this. Well, yeah, so that's the extent of your, well, as if that were not enough to chew on, we will be convening here again next week to discuss our reaction to the pilot, Series 10, Episode 1, The Return of Peter Capaldi, the introduction of Pearl Mackey, as Bill, oh, and Matt Lucas as Narlock.
All right. Well, this has been Episode 228 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, I'm ready for Series 10, a.k.a. Firefly Season 2.
And this is Kier saying, I wish more than anything, more than life, more than riches. I wish.
And this is Haley saying, as you wish.
As you wish.
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. Tell us on Twitter at Gallifrey Radio or on Facebook at facebook.com/Gallifrey Public Radio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.